You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. And this morning, the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, released its jobs report. It wasn't, well, I wanted to say the numbers weren't very good, but you got to understand, you have the impact of the hurricane. Now, what's getting everyone's attention is the unemployment rate of 3.7%, and that's the lowest since December of 1969. So I'm going to do an analysis of that as my second story. But I wanted you to know that I'm cautiously optimistic. I would expect that if the economy truly is growing above its trend line of many decades, and it depends what decade you start or stop in terms of measuring it, it's about 3 to 3.5%. But when you're in an expansionary period, and this is the second longest expansionary period, you would expect economic growth rates to be above that number, and hopefully at 4, 5, 6%. Now, we've had a quarter of that, but we need, it's, as I always say, it is a snapshot, but it's the trend that really matters. And what drives job creation is high economic growth. And if it's 4 or 5%, you would expect a much stronger jobs number, not in the 200,000 range, and that's more or less where it's been, sometimes more, sometimes less. You'd expect it consistently to be 300,000 plus, and you need 300,000 plus to truly do two things. One is make sure we have jobs for people who are entering the labor force, and we do. You need anywhere from 130,000 to 150,000. So the job number at least did that, but yet the unemployment rate went down 0.2%. Well, what you need to understand, part of what's going on is what? People are leaving the labor force, have left the labor force, and have not come back. And that was true both in the Obama years and now. What you need and what you need to look at is the labor participation rate. And until that gradually goes back up, and I think it will take at least a minimum of 3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years to get back to where it was in the end of the Clinton years and the beginning of the George W. Bush years, namely between 66 and 67%. And yes, the baby boom generation is retiring. That's not what I always here. Well, we have a change in the labor pool. More and more older Americans are retiring. Yes, but the biggest generation today is not the baby boom generation. It was for a long, long time. It's really millennials. And there are job opportunities. But until I see consistently high growth rates followed by consistently high, and I mean month after month after month, of 300,000 plus jobs, and with that, and if we had those kind of numbers, we would be seeing what you want to see is not only a falling unemployment rate, but a rising labor participation rate. Where will we get the workers? Well, they're there. They're not in the labor force. And you got to understand, people not in the labor force, many of them will never come back. They're permanently retired. Others are, for a period of time, are having their children or staying home. But what happens is many people lost their jobs during the Great Recession. And either have only found temporary part-time jobs. Well, they are counted in the employment statistics, but what they're really looking for is a permanent long-time job. And to the extent that they get laid off, it's going to take them some time to get back into the labor force. I'm cautiously optimistic that if we see in the next year or two consistently high growth rates, either equal to or greater than the 3% historical rate, then what will happen is the labor participation rate will go right back up, and that's what we want. And with that, though, we'll also see a declining unemployment rate. Now, many people seem to think, and the only reason I can think people say this is when they went to grad school, because many of them are saying, well, we're at near full employment. No, we're not at near full employment. Give me a break. You have probably 20 million people that are not in the labor force that could and would come back to the labor force if you had a permanent, full-time, good-paying job with benefits. And you'll see that when the economy is booming. When it's hard to find people, what happens? Employers increase wages and salaries. They need to find bodies to do the jobs. And I'm going to highlight one industry that's, I mentioned trucking a couple, I think last month, another industry that is looking for people is construction. Now, yes, it got very hard hit during the last recession. Over 1.5 million left the industry. Many retired, many more switched into other careers. Well, now what's happened? We're having the beginnings, and it depends on which city you're at. You're seeing more and more of those cranes. I'm not talking birds. I'm talking those construction cranes. So there's a need for construction workers, and what happens when you have a need? Employers will, one, train you, and two, offer you more money. Now, it's going to be slow, because it takes time for people to adjust. When they can't hire people, eventually they need bodies. So if you're a millennial, and in the past they were the ones having the most difficulty finding a job, especially that those that simply don't, either not capable or don't want to go to college, one good avenue is construction. Learn a trade. You pick the trade you want, whether it's carpentry, electricity, cement laying, brick laying. There are a whole bunch of trades, different specialties, and if you learn one and have the training and OSHA, occupational safety, there are several courses that they offer that construction companies, one of the first things they'll ask, and it depends on the city you're looking at, do you have that OSHA card or flags? Let's say you're in, when you have a large project, you need a lot of cement, so you need people that can know the signals, and that's sort of a low entry job, but it can lead to other things. So I'm going to be talking about the labor unemployment rate, the civilian labor participation rate, it's still under 63%, folks, as well as where should you be looking for jobs. And one thing before I forget, the best place is look for new businesses, because new business owners has to hire people, and they have to compete. That's the labor market. You need to compete with other people to get a job. Now, I want to play, for those that are new listeners, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican. And the reason is very simple. Both the parties today are big government parties. And the easiest way to know where the majority of them rate, I always, and I'll say it again, go to Conservative Review. And I don't know what state you're in, what city you're in, but look up your local congressman, congresswoman, then look up your senators. And then go to, in other words, you're at the scorecard for Conservative Review. They give letter grades A, B, C, D, F, as well as number grades. Well, because it's the Conservative Review, the conservatives are the A's and some of the B's. Unfortunately, there's too few of them. If you count senators and congressmen, you're under 100. You're around somewhere between 50 and 60. Out of 435 representatives and 100 senators, that's not very good. Where are most of the leadership of the Republican Party? They're F's and D's. They're usually in the 30s, 40s, maybe 50s. But most are in the 30s, 40s. And the reason is they've been there a long time. There are a lot of votes. What about the Democrats? They're from either in single digits up to around maybe 25. But who are the majority of Republicans closest to? The A or B Republicans? No. They're closest to the Democrats. And that is undeniable. And that's the problem with the Republican Party. It's a big government party. And they play games, both in the Senate and the House. They want you to think they're different. And on many issues, they are. But in terms of spending your money, there's very little difference between the two, and that's the problem. At one time, conservatism, and it still is, a pillar of conservatism, a principle of conservatism, was financial responsibility. Not anymore. And that's when I, 12 years ago, I said, bye-bye, because and let me make clear, if there is a candidate that is fiscally responsible and isn't a Republican, I might vote for him if I'm persuaded that's what they truly believe. What I've seen is the longer they're there, what happens? They become big spenders. They look like Democrats. And many of them, you've seen the hearings, they've been there more than 12 years. And that's my reason I say 12 years and out. I'm for term limits. But they're not going to vote themselves out. Let's take McConnell. He's the majority leader in the Senate of the Republicans. And he was fairly good, and if you listen to him, in terms of supporting Kavanaugh. But how long has he been there? Over 36 years. Now, that means over six terms. He's on his seventh term, folks. I favor a constitutional amendment that would limit representatives and senators to a maximum of 12 consecutive years. In other words, up or out. Once you're there 12 years, you're out. Once you're in the Senate 12 years, you're out. We need new people, new ideas, new people. Now, that's not a cure-all, but the reason I recommend this, like I said, many of them play the game. They go along with the leadership, and because of we've had leadership both in the House and the Senate in terms of Republicans, what happens? They're not for financial responsibility. They can't balance a budget to save their lives. That is the problem. We have a bunch of followers. They're not leaders. And that's why I wipe my hands of them. And as far as I'm concerned, the only way you're going to see some real change is if we see a new third party. Now, the reason I got on this is I'm not a big fan of Susan Collins. Never have been, never will be. But even I can be surprised, and I was surprised. I wasn't sure she was going to vote for Kavanaugh. But she did. She voted yes. And I thought it was one of the best speeches I've heard in the Senate in my lifetime. There have been a few other ones, but this one was important. And I wanted to play a few excerpts from it. And I forget her rating. I believe she's in the 20s. So she's a solid F Republican. And yes, she's closer to Democrats. Some of her best friends are Democrats. And one of my hot button issues, I'm pro-life. She's not. She's pro-choice or pro-abortion. But I wanted to play a couple of clips. In this speech, and for those that are new listeners, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photograph of myself in the studio, you will see links to the most 60 to 80 shows. But under that, you'll see some of my show prep, and I have a lot of show prep. And it includes articles, photographs, cartoons, YouTube video clips. So let's listen to Susan Collins.
Mr. President, we've heard a lot of charges and countercharges about Judge Kavanaugh. But as those who have known him best have attested, he has been an exemplary public servant, judge, teacher, coach, husband, and father. Despite the turbulent, bitter fights surrounding his nomination, my fervent hope is that Brett Kavanaugh will work to lessen the divisions in the Supreme Court so that we have far fewer 5-4 decisions, and so that public confidence in our judiciary and our highest court is restored. Mr. President, I will vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. Mr. President, the Constitution does not provide guidance on how we are supposed to evaluate these competing claims. It leaves that decision up to each senator. This is not a criminal trial, and I do not believe that the claims such as these need to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Nevertheless, fairness would dictate that the claims at least should meet a threshold of more likely than not as our standard. The facts presented do not mean that Professor Ford was not sexually assaulted that night or at some other time, but they do lead me to conclude that the allegations failed to meet the more likely than not standard. Therefore, I do not believe that these charges can fairly prevent Judge Kavanaugh from serving on the court. Let me emphasize that my approach to this question should not be misconstrued as suggesting that unwanted sexual contact of any nature is not a serious problem in this country. To the contrary, if any good at all has come from this ugly confirmation process, it has been to create an awareness that we have underestimated the pervasiveness of this terrible problem. I listened carefully to Christine Blasey Ford's testimony before the Judiciary Committee. I found her testimony to be sincere, painful, and compelling. I believe that she is a survivor of a sexual assault and that this trauma has upended her life. Nevertheless, the four witnesses she named could not corroborate any of the events of that evening gathering where she says the assault occurred. None of the individuals Professor Ford says were at the party has any recollection at all of that night. Judge Kavanaugh forcefully denied the allegations under penalty of perjury. Mark Judge denied under penalty of felony that he had witnessed an assault. P.J. Smith, another person allegedly at the party, denied that he was there under penalty of felony. Professor Ford's lifelong friend, Leland Kaiser, indicated that under penalty of felony, she does not remember that party. And Ms. Kaiser went further. She indicated that not only does she not remember a night like that, but also that she does not even know Brett Kavanaugh. The Me Too movement is real. It matters. It is needed. And it is long overdue. We know that rape and sexual assault are less likely to be reported to the police than other forms of assault. On average, an estimated 211,000 rapes and sexual assaults go unreported every year. We must listen to survivors, and every day we must seek to stop the criminal behavior that has hurt so many. We owe this to ourselves, our children, and generations to come.
Now, that was parts of Susan Collins' speech. If you haven't heard it, I strongly recommend listening to it, the entire speech. I'm trying to think. It's about an hour. Depends on which YouTube clip you get. It's well worth listening to. I call it a profile in courage because it took courage to do this. But she's a careful listener, and she really reviewed the record of Judge Kavanaugh on the courts, his judicial philosophy, and the importance of independence and his strong support of the rule of law. And it was just refreshing. It wasn't an emotional commitment. It was an intellectual commitment based on an analysis of what he said to her as well as what he said in the hearings. And I believe she's come to the right decision. So many people, especially Republicans in the Senate, but also on talk radio, today were applauding, as am I, Susan Collins. I think it was an outstanding and historic speech. It was in support of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And I think by sometime Saturday, remember there's a 30-hour limit in terms of making these speeches, so sometime Saturday afternoon, late Saturday afternoon, we should know the decision. I think it will be definitely in favor, just in favor of Kavanaugh. He'll win by most likely 2 votes. We don't know the exact vote because Lisa Murkowski is going to vote no or present. And the reason I say that, I don't think she's going to switch to a yes, but we have one Republican that wants to attend, and I can understand this, his daughter's marriage ceremony, and won't be there. So usually what the Senate does, they pair, sometimes it's two Republicans or a Republican and a Democrat that are on opposite sides. I suspect that the Alaskan senator will vote present, offsetting the, and that's not a no, by the way, understand that. And the senator that would have voted yes if he was there won't be there. So the Republicans should have a 2-point vote win, and we'll know about this Saturday. And then come Monday, we'll have a swearing-in ceremony, and I will play parts of that. And probably Judge Kavanaugh should serve 10, 20, maybe 30 years. He's a young man in his 50s, early 50s. So I would say at least 10, if not 20 or 30. And I think he'll make a fine justice. I would have rathered a more conservative judge be appointed, but I have no problems with Kavanaugh. And I think Susan Collins is right, unfortunately, that I don't think you're going to see a move to, although I wish there was a move, to rightly decide, in other words, not honor the precedent of Roe versus Wade. I think it was wrongly decided. But it's going to take a almost overwhelming majority of conservatives, and we won't have that unless Trump gets to pick another 2 or 3. Right now, we will be shortly back at a 5-4. It's only if the conservatives pick up 2 or 3. In other words, it's 7 or 8 to 1 that we might see, depending on what case makes it possible, a modification, if not a right outright repeal of Roe versus Wade. Now, I know the left, especially those that are pro-abortion, I call them the baby killers, they're panicking, but I don't really think that. I think even some of them that have studied it and looked at it are not that panicked. Now, they will be panicked if Donald Trump gets another 3 picks, because if he picks like this, in terms of Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, it'll be a conservative, most likely a woman next time, and that would give a 6-3 balance. And then if Donald Trump gets reelected for a second term, I think he'll probably get at least one more. So he could end up actually picking 4, possibly even 5. But that depends on the health of the people on the court, and they're getting up there. Some of them are in the 70s, some are in the 80s, and just look at the actuarial tables and you can see what I'm saying. So I wanted to salute Susan Collins. I normally don't do that, but I thought she gave an outstanding speech that all Americans should listen to, although I don't agree with some of the points that she's making. Now, I want to turn to the unemployment situation. Now, I was a little surprised, although I thought about it, and I said what I think happened is, and I need to say this, all these unemployment numbers, they're revised both up and down. I suspect that the low number of jobs created, and it was 134,000, that even surprised the people that make these predictions. Most of them were predicting about 185,000. You see, if the economy were truly growing 4%, 5%, 6%, that should be a surprise. Now, this is enough jobs to keep up with the every month you have new people entering the labor force. It's sort of at the bottom range. But I want to start seeing consistently not over 200,000, but starting to hit 300,000. We haven't seen that, and that's my concern, and I think the president should be concerned. We keep hearing about job shortages in the trucking industry, construction industry, and certain other industries. I have no doubt that there are shortages. The shortage is not people to fill the jobs. It's qualified people that have the experience and training to do the job. And those tend to be older workers that have done the jobs in the past. And you simply have some employers, unfortunately a lot of employers, that think they're still in a buyer's market. Well, we're seeing that pendulum, and I've seen this over the years. It's now rapidly and hopefully continue swinging from a buyer's market, which I mean the employers more or less tell you, well, if you want to work for us, we're going to pay you so much, to a seller's market where they really need people and they're going to have to pay more. And we saw that in the news that Amazon is going to be increasing their so-called minimum wage to $15. They're not doing that out of the generosity of their corporation. They need people to do the work. And the only way they're going to get people, and like I said, you have people that are not in the labor force that might come out for a higher paying job. Now, $15 is sort of towards the bottom. Those are more new entrants. And I always have to tell people that less than 3% of the labor force makes the minimum wage. I'm totally against minimum wages. I think you should be free. You should be free. Employers should be free to determine what hourly rate, what salary that they want to hire you. And if you're not satisfied with it, what you need to do is find another job someplace else where they're willing to pay you more money. So I'm not a fan of minimum wage laws at all. I'm for the market to driving wages. But if you're an inexperienced worker with little or no job experience, just out of high school, and to a lesser extent, but still true out of college, businesses are taking a risk on you. Now, once they determine you show up on time, you dress appropriately, you're a hard worker, what happens is you're going to get fairly rapid increases in wages. They want to keep you because they first have to train you on the job. And if they see you're motivated and come to work and do the job, you're going to see a series of pay increases and promotions. And as a result, you're making first above the minimum wage, and eventually, over several years, you're going to be significantly above the minimum wage. So only a really small percentage of the labor market has people that are earning the minimum wage. Always keep that in mind, because the Democrats go on and on. They want to dictate to business. They want to intervene in the economy and tell businesses what they should pay someone. That is a formula for what? People losing their jobs. People that are happy with the jobs they have losing them, because a city council and a state dictates to the business owners, especially small businesses, new businesses, that they have to pay more than they can afford. Keep that in mind. Now, and I know that it's been a while since we've changed the minimum wage. I want to abolish the minimum wage. Your aim should be getting the maximum wage. And if employers want to hire good workers, people that know what they're doing, come in on time, dress appropriately, are motivated, then they better take care of those people. Because if you talk to small businesses, they know they need people, and they will steal your employee away from you, either with a higher salary and or much better retirement plan, much better medical plans, dental plans. And that's what I want to encourage, competition throughout the free enterprise, competitive market capitalist system. That should be the driver, competition, not government regulation, not government intervention, telling businesses that they must pay a minimum amount. That's a bad idea that, quite frankly, should, as far as I'm concerned, should be abolished. But the Democrats, that's one of their... They want to convince you, oh, we're for the average guy because we want to increase the minimum wage. Well, like I said, most people don't make the minimum wage. They make much more than a minimum wage. So don't believe the propaganda, the nonsense. Now, 134,000 new farm payroll jobs, even though they revised upward the previous 2 months, it's not a very good number. But what got all the attention? Well, the unemployment rate got down to 3.7%. Good. It should go under 3%. It's going to take at least a year for that to happen. You see, what I want to see is that unemployment rate go lower and lower and lower gradually. It's not going to happen all at once. But as it's going lower, what's gradually going up? The labor participation rate. First above 63%, then above 64%, then 65%, and then back to 66%. You see, historically, in the early 50s, the labor participation rate was under 60%. And then in the 60s, 70s, and really up to today, what has happened? More and more women have entered the labor force. So the women labor participation rate went up, up, and up. But gradually, what was happening? The men's labor participation rate was gradually going down. So when you average the two, over time, and we're talking decades, by the time you got to the Clinton administration, the Bush, George W. Bush administration, the labor participation rate was routinely between 66 and 67%. And although I understand you have the baby boom generation increasingly retire, you have a much bigger millennial generation. And because of that, and they're still looking for jobs, every day you have people that are either leaving college or leaving high school or graduating from high school or graduating from college, entering the labor force. They need jobs. They need starting positions. And then they need to get on a career ladder. And then you have the people that, as a result of the last recession, many of them retired, but many would come back if offered the right opportunity. So I think it's perfectly possible to get back to at least a 66% labor participation rate. And if we truly had a booming, roaring economy, we're not there yet, folks. We are not. But if we did, I think we could get to 67% and maybe beyond 67%, because there were some months where it was higher than even 67%. Don't believe this propaganda that, well, the new normal is 63%. I don't buy that at all. You see, the government wants to minimize the bad news. See, I look at the U6 rate, which is normally about double. You can, when it's low, it's slightly less than double. When it's high, it's more than double the U3 rate. So if you double it, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's less than 7%. That's not a good number. It's not lower than 3. And you have some people that think, well, 4 or 5% is near full employment. That's the best we can do. No, that's not the best we can do. So what I'm hoping to see, and it really depends on the economic policies of Donald Trump and whether or not Congress is going to finally, and here I'm not optimistic at all, start to really balance the budget. That is the number one problem, economic problem, facing the United States. Namely, government spending is out of control. And until the Republican Party has a leadership willing to focus on that, and they won't. That's why I say, if you're waiting for the Republican Party to balance the budget, where what we spend is what we collect in tax revenue, you're going to wait an awful long time, and it might not ever happen. That's why I don't vote Republican. I certainly don't vote Democrats are even worse. They want to increase your taxes, increase spending. I say, okay, we gotta pay for our increased spending. No, what you have to do is stop spending the money that we don't have, the American people don't have. Because businessmen, what is the one thing that businessmen don't like? Uncertainty. They want an economy that's booming, but they look at the debt that the United States government has to issue every business day to pay its bills. And the national debt keeps going higher and higher. And even though you can focus on the national debt, the bigger picture is the benefits and pensions that the government has promised, that they simply have not funded it. They haven't invested so they can pay the benefits. So what does that mean? At some future date, to pay the benefits, what is Congress going to have to do? Either they're going to have to dramatically increase taxes or dramatically cut benefits or a combination of the two. And what I'm talking about are both social welfare programs and entitlement programs. The two biggies are Social Security and Medicare. We don't have leadership, and we don't have a party in Washington that's leading on this issue. Far from it. We have two political parties that are big government parties. They want to spend more and more and more money on government programs. Oh, yes, we got a tax cut, or at least businesses got a tax cut primarily. We didn't get fundamental tax reform, and that is a problem. And as like I said last show, we need to go to a broad-based consumption tax. That's not going to get passed until we have a president that champions a fair tax or something similar to it. My version, I think, is better. It's called Fair Tax Less. One of the reasons I call it less, the fair tax that many people support is 23%. My fair tax less is 20%, and my prebate is significantly higher than the fair tax people. But I don't expect either of those much better tax systems to be passed until you have a president and a party that believes you and me, the American people, are in the best position to determine how their money is spent, not some representative or senator or president that thinks the answer to all social problems is another government program. And there's also, don't forget, we have very much today an American empire, an interventionist foreign policy. Now, the American people don't really support an interventionist policy, but the people that make the decisions in Washington, including in Congress, including in the bureaucracy, want to be policemen of the world, want to intervene in country after country. And the reason why that's a problem is not only do your sons and daughters get killed or wounded, seriously wounded, in many foreign places. But it all costs a lot of money. And many of the people in these nations, after a period of time, they try to kill your sons and daughters. They don't appreciate what we're trying to do for them. And if you can't understand it, would you appreciate some other nation, let's say communist China, intervening in the United States? No. You'd be there, or at least some of you would be there, trying to kill the communist Chinese if they intervene in our country. Well, other people feel the same way about American troops being in their country. So I'm not an interventionist. I'm a non-interventionist. I'm all for trade. I'm not an isolationist. I'm for trade, especially fair and free trade, and just stay out of the business and the affairs of other countries, only if they attack United States citizens or United States, the property of United States citizens, should we even consider what we're going to do to that foreign nation. You see, there's always a push for more and more military spending so we can have more and more intervention in country after country. War is expensive, so is the preparation for war expensive. And given our financial situation now, we no longer can afford that luxury. So will we see the big question in my mind, and we won't know the answer for at least 2 years. But the first indication of whether or not growth rates are much higher now under Trump than President Obama will be the end of this month, a couple of weeks from now, because that's when the first quarterly report for the third quarter will be out. That ended 30 September. Now, if it's between 4 and 5%, like many of the forecasters are predicting, that would make two solid quarters of not only above the trend line of 3%, but either at or a little bit above 4%. And hopefully, if we can string 3 or 4 or 5 quarters like that, what you should be seeing is much lower unemployment rates, both U3 and U6, and much higher labor participation rate. The takeaway is consistency. One quarter or 1 month does not make a record. You got to be consistently performing, getting results, and results measured in the growth of real GDP, gross domestic product, in other words, the total final goods and services produced in the U.S. economy. And to the extent that we have higher and increasing economic growth rates, what does that mean? You have more business formation, more entrepreneurs start business, more capital formation, in other words, more investment. And what that means to especially unemployed people is more jobs. I always say, if you want to quickly find a job, look in your neighborhood, community, where new businesses start up. They're always looking for new people. Doesn't mean you're going to get the best paying job, but you're going to get a job and grow with that business. Some become giants, but many fail. But it gives you a start, especially if you're new to the labor market. It takes years to really get on a career path, and you have to decide what industry you want to be in, what type of job in that industry you want, and you're going to be competing with a lot of people. And if you don't have the education, get the education. Go to school at night. Many people first work for a living and then gradually take one or two courses every semester. And it's hard because you're either working or going to school at night, have homework. But how many courses do you need to get a bachelor's degree today? Usually about 42 or 3. So if you take two a semester, six in a year, it'll take you 7 years. But at the end of 7 years, you'll have a college degree. And if you're working hard at your job, sometimes the large corporations will actually pay your tuition. But you're making yourself more attractive to future employers, including the one you're working for. And they see your motivation, they see your effort, and they try to keep you. And they keep you by promoting you for more responsibility and paying you more money. So we want a booming economy. There are some people that don't. I wish we would have a booming economy, and I mean 5-6%. Now, I know, as an economist, you can't sustain that. You would like to sustain it. Just got the signal, I got to wrap it up. So I'm not going to have time really to touch on the last story. But one area I would say to check out is construction. Because let's face it, folks, why there has been a push for the last, at least 40, if not 50 years, you got to have a college degree. That's nonsense. All a college degree really shows that you can read and write and pass a multiple choice test. And there are exceptions. But I would say at least a third, if not a half, of the people going to college today either don't belong there or they don't want to be there. And now, thank God, more and more businesses are saying, you know, we don't need a college degree. We need somebody that can read and write. I'm not saying you don't need some minimum schools. And at one time, that's what you got with a high school education. You got people that could read and write. And I mean, really read and write. Because a lot of people never graduated from high school. Business owners, entrepreneurs, they want people that perform, get results, work hard, are reliable, responsible. And who cares whether or not you have a college education? And they certainly don't care what you got in one or more of your courses. College, in my mind, is only for a small percentage of the population. I would say 25 to 30%. The rest don't want to be there and don't need it. Had they paid attention and done their homework in high school, they don't need a college degree. The problem is today, many of these junior colleges, they don't call them junior colleges anymore, community colleges. They're trying to remedy the lack of skills, reading and writing skills, thinking skills, basic mathematical skills that students should have gotten in high school. We used to have the finest high schools in the world. We no longer do. We're dumbing down not only the high schools, we're dumbing down college. And as businesses realize that, there'll be less and less a requirement that you go to college. You still got to read and write and do basic math. Still got to show up for the job. But what's, I think, a good trend is fewer and fewer businesses are demanding a college education. There's always going to be companies that insist on a diploma or the certification or some credential. Go elsewhere because there's competition, folks. Whether it's in the trucking industry, whether it's in the construction industry, whether it's in sales, there's always jobs for the hustler, the people that get it done, get results. Now, my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, Family, Friends, Freedom First. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProcPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.